would like to welcome everyone to our school board meeting today and look forward to presentations and just welcome you for being here. We'd like to begin our meeting by, we had a visit to the Ellis School for a little over an hour, had a delightful experience there, and now we will resume. We'll first have a Pledge Allegiance by Fred Dersch. So Fred, if you would.
Would all please rise and repeat after me, Pledge Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any public comment? Okay, then we will move on to our consent calendar. Has everyone had an opportunity to look at that? And if so, you agree if we have a motion?
I'll move we approve the consent calendar as submitted.
Okay, it's been Fred Dersch has moved that we accept the consent calendar as seconded by
Jim Blair.
Boy, I went blank. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll now go into, we're going to move down to item number two, the report on the SHARP data with Clark Ballard and Alan Grunig. So if we could go to that, Clark.
Am I going to do better sitting down there?
And you've all seen our new microphone.
Yes,
I have. I like it a lot.
You might, if you want. I did bring a printout for you guys if you want to look up at that, but it isn't in color, so some of the slides will be maybe easier.
If you want to look at it, you can, I don't know, come sit down here or turn around. We're projecting and not back here. So.
And the part when they get to the Logan City specific information that is on the portal.
So do you want me to use this?
Yeah.
Feels a little official. Oh, okay. So thanks for letting Ellen and myself come. I work at the Health Department in Substance Abuse Prevention, and my name is Kathy Lloyd. And we are here, if some of you may remember a couple years ago, we came and spoke about the SHARP data. And we do this every other year in the school districts all around the state. And so we came to kind of just share the report. It came out again this year, this fall. And does anybody, who has heard of SHARP before? A few of you? Okay. So I'll give you a little bit of a background to start out with and also give you some information on the validity and reliability of the data, too. And then Alan will talk about some of the results specific to your school district. How it works is we do it every other year in the spring, and we do it in grades 6, 8th, 10th, and 12th. And we receive, Bach Harrison does it for the state of Utah, and then we receive a report for our local health district, which is Cache Rich and Box Elder, and that is public record. And so that is available on the state of Utah's Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health. It's on their website. And that's what we get to see. And then if the school districts allow us to, we can see their reports for their school district and for their schools. But again, when we do look at that, usually we just use it for program planning. It's not ever usually public record. And just so that you know, it is very reliable. And they've taken extreme measures to make sure that it is reliable. It's confidential, and the kids are told that nobody will see this data, that they can link it back to you, so that can give them some comfort to share their information without them worrying about people seeing it, that or teachers or something. It's often not even the teacher that gives the survey in the classroom, it's somebody else. And then through all of the instructions, the confidentiality is very much stressed. In order to make sure that it was reliable, they have a really reliable or valid survey design that we've used for years. Every year we add a few more questions to it and take away ones that maybe weren't working. But they did pre-test it with other youth to make sure that they were understanding the questions right so that we can make sure that the data is correct when we get it and reliable. And so they also have a really tested protocol for the administration of the survey, meaning when a teacher gives that survey, they read through the protocol to follow it exactly like that across the state. And then, so the other thing that I think is kind of interesting, a lot of times we're giving it to 6th, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders, and most of the time they want to, people will say, they kind of want to say, well, that survey data isn't accurate because we all know that kids will lie and we're asking pretty sensitive questions about substance abuse and other things that way, and so they think that maybe they would lie. So they put in a lot of controls to make sure that that doesn't happen, and the first one is that it is confidential and anonymous, and so because of that, that takes away a lot of the reasoning to kind of brag or to lie about their use. So that helps with that. And then also, if the survey isn't established as truthful or reliable, then they automatically take it out of the state report and all of the local reports. So those questions aren't included in that. And then if they don't answer enough of the validity questions that I'll go over in just a second, then they take those out as well. And so these are the validity survey questions that they have built in, and I think these are kind of, some of them are kind of funny. They kind of are tricky. There's a question at the end that asks, how honest do you feel like you were when you did the survey? And if they answer that they weren't honest at all, then they take that entire survey out. So if a person is honest on that question, but none of the rest, then therefore they take that out. Then they also put in a non-existent drug in all of the questions. They ask questions about 30-day use, lifetime use, first time when they began using. And if they answer yes to any of those questions on this fake drug, then they also take all of those out of the surveys. If they reported an impossibly high amount so that they just seems unrealistic for that age group, then they take that survey out as well. And then if they report a higher amount on their 30-day use than they did on their lifetime use, that's taken out. And then if they report that they're maybe like 18, but they are in the 6th and 7th or 8th grade center or school, then they would take that out as well. So all of those...
How many left then?
What was that?
You don't have very many left.
Yeah. Well, I guess you can understand why some of our respondents are a little bit low. And you can find that when you do look. Let me kind of address you to that. When you do look at your report on page 3, it gives the characteristics of the participants of the survey. And I will say that great job to Logan School District and even the state of Utah. We had a higher respondents than we ever have. And the state of Utah has active consent, which means that not only could, if in other states, there's, I don't know if it's called passive consent or whatever, but just by not turning it in, then the student can take it. But in our state, when we send home a parental consent, they have to have received the paper back saying that, yes, they can take it. So sometimes there can be challenges in getting enough data back. But we actually have, in the state of Utah, higher numbers this year, plus we have in Logan School District, we did really well and much better than we have in other years. So that is kudos to Kathy. I don't remember. Where's Clark? What was her name, Ellen? Kathy Elliott. She really worked hard on that, so kudos to her. Just some of the things so that you know how cool this data is. A lot of times, actually, I get excited about it, and people in my coalition often think I'm a little crazy. They're like, you got to call it something different because data is just not that exciting. But I think there's some cool stuff in here. It tells us 30-day lifetime use rates for 6th, 8th, 10th, and 12th grades. It also tells us we can find out first age of use, when their initial age of use, places that they might have used alcohol in the last year. It also can tell us if there's high-risk use or problem behaviors. And I won't get to that quite yet. And then there's also safety and bullying. And then risk and protective factors. And risk in prevention, what we're trying to do is reduce risk and increase protection. And then that hopefully will impact our long-term substance use rates. And so that is also in here. This year is some cool stuff. We have texting and driving data that's in there, and physical activity, and then depression and suicide thoughts. The depression and suicide is available in your report, but the texting and driving and the physical activity, if you want to see that, then Mary from Buck Harrison can send you some information on that. But it wasn't included in the actual reports that were sent out. And just so you know, we use SHARP a whole bunch. We have, as a health department, we use it a ton by establishing this is how we figure out what area we want to focus on to really have the best need. And so we use it a whole bunch. Schools, local schools have used it to do their own program planning as well in school districts. And it has been used to get grants and things in not just the health department, but in other school districts in our area as well. So do you want, Alan, you want to do this one?
You know, as you look at the SHARPS data here, it lists the information for 10th, 12th, 8th, and 6th grades. And what we've done is we've taken the data, and we've showed you what the data is for 2011, and then in blue, we put the data in 2009, so you can see what happens there. Now, in grade 6, generally all the rates are low. Inhalants was the most common used chemical, and in 2009 it was 2.2, and in 2011 it became 1.9. So you can see that went down. I wish I could say that was for all of the grades. But it with alcohol use in grade 8, it went up from 3.1 in 2009 to 4 in 2011. Marijuana use really took a large jump from 0.6 to 2.2, and for prescription drug medication it went from 1.3 to 1.6. Grade 11, you can see that it also went down there, and that's a good thing as we do that. But grade 12, look at that one. It went from 4.5 to 22.6. So that's a big, huge jump. And marijuana went from 2.7 to 10.6. And cigarettes went from 2.8 to 8.9. So there are some things here that we're concerned about, some trends that are being set there. And what we want to do is work with the school board in order to tie our programs in to what you're doing, so we get the maximum effect from our substance abuse dollars and from our working together and cooperating there. Kathy, any questions on this slide first before we go on? Because this shows a pretty significant increase.
Are those increases consistent with what you've seen in the rest of the county?
Yes. And the state. It's kind of that same general trend in the county and the state.
Does the SHARP survey, I haven't looked at the questions, I know I looked at them last year, but does it indicate, it seems like it had a question that asked where they acquired.
We're going to come to that.
Okay.
Christy, because that's important. There's a trend there too. And so okay. We're going to come to that.
So that question's still on.
Yes. And we'll show you what the results for that are. Okay, Kathy?
Real quick too, something to note is that a little change like 3.1 in alcohol in grade 8 to 4 is not real significant in our smaller report. In the state, 1% change would be big, but because we have such a small report with Logan School District, that if you were usually looking for about a 5% change for it to be significant. The 1% in alcohol in grade 8, so we would watch for it because we obviously don't want it going up, but it might just be maybe we had more people, maybe the group that did it, so we pay more attention to a larger increase like around 5%.
Okay, now this one is kind of interesting because it gives us what happens here. And the average use of onset for use of alcohol is 13.6 years. That's why we as a health department, I'm out into sixth grade classes as much as I can get out into those classes to talk to them about alcohol, because that's where we want to give them the information so that they can start making decisions. Cigarettes is 12.9, and I try to do as much as I can in the 7th grade classes for that one. Marijuana use is 14.7. And then there's a difference here between perceived and actual use. And you can take a look at those numbers and see what happens there. So the perception's a little bit different than the actual use, as you can see there. And that table's on page 44 in your book.
That would mean by perceived and actual.
Yeah.
perceived is they're asked, how many kids your age do you think used alcohol in the last, I think it's 30 days, and then, or cigarettes, they ask each of those individual questions, and then actual is the actual report for the last 30 days, or the last year, whichever the question is. So this is important because a lot of times there's something called social norming, and if a kid believes that all the kids their age are using, then they're more likely to use. And so it's not good for us to see that 9.2 are actually using alcohol. We don't like that. But if they perceive that 23.9 are, then those kids that aren't using are more likely to.
And that's why in our programs that we really try to stress that not very many kids are using. They might perceive that there are, but not very many kids are as we go through there. So we can take that social norming and bring it back into line there. Any other questions?
Another comment.
Go ahead, Kathy.
The other reason why it's good is we don't want them to believe, or as adults, when we look at these numbers, yeah, they're alarming, but and we don't want any kids using alcohol or cigarettes or marijuana, but we want to be careful to be clear that most kids aren't using whenever we are working with kids and talking to them. But, and even adults, you know, yeah, we don't want any kid using, but in our community we do have pretty low rates and we want to keep them low. And most kids aren't.
That's why when I go out, I always use the actual, not the perceived, as I talk to them, that this is how many you're using, and do it on a percentage basis so that they can see. Now, this one is really interesting, too, because we're seeing an alarming trend here as we come through here. So these are risk factors that we're talking about. Now, this is all grades. This is combined with all the grades that we have there. And notice the parent attitudes favorable towards substance abuse, alcohol and substance abuse. Notice in 2009 that it was under 30. And in 2011, it was over 40. And so the perception there is that parents don't care. And so kids say, well, my parents don't care. I'm going to go ahead and do that. It doesn't matter. And then parents favorable towards drug use, you can see that went up the same. Family conflict stayed about the same. There's not a significant change there, but a low commitment to school went up quite a bit in the 2011. So there are some things there that we really need to take a look at to see what's happening there, especially in the home situation and their parents' attitudes. This one was quite alarming to us, and I know I've talked with Marshall about that a little bit, and we're concerned about that. So we're trying to get some parent meetings out through the PTAs in order to get this information out into the community, using our area, not Logan District, but our area information to get that out there. And then if you look at this one, which are protective factors, all grades, family attachment went down, family opportunities went down, family rewards went down, school opportunities went down, and school rewards stayed about the same. And so we're seeing more of a risk in our risk factors as they're going up, and our protective factors are going down. And that holds true with what we're seeing as the actual use for substance abuse, too, as we do that. So there's some alarming trends as we go through here that we need to reverse that. We need to get our protective factors going up and our risk factors going down.
Can you give us an example of that? So what would indicate family opportunities or family attachment?
Well, family attachment would be that they have some family values and that they want those family values and parents are teaching those family values, so it's bonding. They eat dinner together. Those kinds of issues that bring and bond that family together. Those are what they are. Opportunities would be things that they can do within their families that reward them, that make them feel acceptable in their family. So those are protective factors, and you can see that they're going down. The risk factors are going up. Did that answer your question, Christy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other questions?
Is there a single family versus a normal family?
I don't know if they... They just have family on there, I think.
It's the child's perception, too.
Okay.
So a family may give them a ton of opportunities, or a parent might feel like their child should feel really attached, but it's the child reporting it. So, I mean, we've even had schools say, we give so many opportunities. Why do you do it? But they still not feel like that, but maybe they didn't view it as a reward, or maybe they didn't view it as an opportunity. But yeah, they never really asked the question as to... or they never put it into this report, I guess.
Okay, next slide. Okay, now this was interesting because you can see here now for a lifetime use and a 30-day use, and the question was asked, do you perceive your parents as saying it's very wrong, a little bit wrong, or not wrong at all? So how the child perceives what their parent is saying to them, and you can see what happens. If the child, in the lifetime use, if the child feels that their parents say using alcohol is very wrong, look how low the use rate is. You know, it's about 16%. And in 30-day use, it's about 3%. So that word very in there is very, very, very important. Wrong, you can see what happens, that it jumps up to 60%. If they perceive that their parents just say it's wrong and not very wrong, it jumps up. And the same with 30-day use, it jumps up. And if their parents say, if they perceive their parents say it's a little bit wrong, it goes higher and not wrong at all. And we'd expect that, the use goes up. So we're really concerned and want to get the information out to the parents that that's the way their child is perceiving their parents' relationship to alcohol. And so we want to make sure as we do our programs, as we do these parent meetings, as we do the PTA meetings, that we make sure we emphasize that. So as I come around and do the maturation parent meetings with those parents, I'm going to talk a lot about this with those in those maturation parent meetings, so that they understand that they have to let their kids know what the consequences and what's expected. It's very, very important. Other comments there? Wow. Okay, Kathy, the next slide.
And just to be clear on this one too, we don't, it's not asking about adult use. This is all about their parental approval or disapproval of them using.
Yeah, it's how they perceive their parents' attitude is. Now this one was kind of shocking, and Marcia and I spent some time talking about this one. It says places of alcohol use in my or someone else's home without parent permission. And you can see from 2009 to 2011 that went up. But the one that really Marcia and I spent some time on is at my home with parent permission. Look how much that went up. You know, so parents are saying, well, if you're going to drink, just drink here by me. Well, what are you teaching your child here? You know, they're not supposed to be drinking. The legal age is 21, and what are you teaching there? And then at someone else's home with permission. That went up too. So this was a little alarming to us, and we want to build in and have some programs and some things that we do that help people understand and help parents understand that. Okay, any other questions on that one? Kathy? Okay, now if you have any questions about this, please contact Mary Van Leeuwen. Is that how you say that? Kathy, you talk to him about this one because you have that information.
This is Mary Van Leeuwen. This is the survey person, and she is an expert in the survey administration. I call her and ask her a lot of questions, and she would be happy to answer any questions that you guys have. So you can email her. That's probably the easiest, or you could even call her. And she could even help you as you're looking through your data to maybe analyze it a little bit and answer some of your questions that way. And then I also put Alan's in my email and phone number in case you have some local questions about some of the things that we're doing here, or if you have any even suggestions on things that we can do to impact these numbers. Obviously, we don't like to see them going up. We'd prefer to see them going down in the youth, and then we really want to see our protective factors increasing. So we have a coalition that looks at this, and we will be reevaluating our programs to make sure that they're doing everything they can to make some changes throughout.
Okay, so things don't look like they're getting better. Are you doing something different than you've done before, or is it the same that we've been doing before? Is the parent attitude that's changing the most? Is that what you think is affecting it, or do you know?
Yeah, you know what? I wondered that as I looked at it. I was bothered. I didn't want to see them going up. There's a couple of things that I don't know that we have done anything significantly different in the last couple of years. A couple of things that I keep in mind as I'm looking at it is, as you notice, 10th grade in a couple of them had gone down, 8th grade and 6th grade, some of them had gone down. So part of that might be that 12th grade, maybe it was a really rough grade. I don't know the 12th graders last year. They would have graduated last year if maybe they were a little rougher. Sometimes that can be part of it. The other part of it is that they that we had a lot more respondents. So this data is likely more reliable than even 2 years ago, because we have, if you notice on that second page, in 2009 we had 111, and this year we had 158. So that could explain it a little bit. And so more than likely, as we watch it throughout the years, we'll probably get a better idea if that is something that is, this is just a unique year and it goes back down. So we'll be watching it really closely. But I think the other thing in our, that we'll really be doing is focusing a lot more on those risk factors and seeing what we can do to change those. So working with parental disapproval, making sure that parents know that they need to make sure their kids know that they don't want them drinking until they're 21, and that they don't want, that they don't approve of them using marijuana. So that's really where our coalition will work and focus on more, and that's where we'll have the more impact.
And this is our third time, or is this only our second?
We've been doing it since 2003.
Also, we have more than just
In this report, just because of space, there's only 2005. 2007, 2009, and 2011.
They didn't put the 2005 data.
So what we have is this year's 12th graders as they were in 10th and what they were in 8th.
Yeah. And I might be able to get you, I think I could get you it for the previous years if you would like. When I talked to Mary from Bach Harrison, she had suggested, because our respondents in this school district in 2005 were so low, because they were really, really low in the high school, that she would probably throw that out and not use that to use as a reference. So, but 6th and 8th, she felt like we had enough respondents that we could really use that a lot.
On the portal, you have the 2009 review, which goes back to 2005. So we, again, have at least some data from the 2005 as well. Clark?
We have 2007. Yes, the results, the link to the results is not there. I'm working on that right now for the 2011.
For the 11. Thank
I
you.
I thought they were up there, but when I opened that file, it was
okay.
File.
So they will be under SHARP eventually. You have the questioning, you have a lot of the preliminary materials, but not the actual data like you have for the 2009. That will be uploaded here for fairly shortly.
And is 2000 the other data under the same tab under SHARP?
Under SHARP, you
have 2009 and 11.
Right. But the actual profile for Mount Logan Middle School and Logan High School have to be added to the SHARP survey 2011.
But we don't have 7 or 5, is what I'm asking.
That is correct.
On the portal.
No.
Okay, and Jim, in answer to your question, we look at this data, and we're going to keep doing the things that we've done with the students, but we're really going to emphasize parents and help parents understand that. That's why if you can encourage PTAs, those kinds of things, to have these parent meetings, let's get this information out to them.
Mm-hmm. Are you presenting to our PTA council at all?
We haven't done, but we would like to.
You know, I think there's our council president. I think when I was the PTA president, if I had received a similar report and realized how important parents are in this whole equation, that we would want to do some things and get you involved with our parents. Of course, often the parents who would come to the meeting are, but I think any parent we give information to, we're helping.
All we need is an invitation.
You're welcome to come in. You've been officially invited.
Any other questions that you have for us?
Have you seen the parents on here allowing it? Has that been growing over the last few years, or do you see that? Has it been fairly stable? Or is
well, in answer to your question, we try to compare from the year before to the current year, and that's where that big increase went up. Mm-hmm. If it's not significant, and not a significant increase, then we just kind of say, well, it's status quo. But when it jumps that much, then, yeah, that has a big impact. that we want to work on.
So the number that was in parentheses with the asterisk, was that the percentage increase, or was that the what the score was in 2009? So it was at 4.5 and it's now at 22?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can see that's significantly different.
Yeah. It was the actual percentage.
Okay.
And two, let me just kind of say on that one about the parent, where or the kids where they were, the sources of alcohol. That was if a student reported it, they were asked where did you use in the last year, where did you drink alcohol, if you drink alcohol in the last year, and so they could have reported multiple places, and so it's not necessarily that it could mean that more parents are allowing it. But it's also just saying that, yeah, this is where kids are getting it. And if you notice, like, the highest number was those that didn't have permission, but they were getting it at home. And so I think another key point that we need to educate parents about is they may not give the permission, but they also need to make sure that they're monitoring their kids, and that if their kids are at home and they have alcohol in their home, that they're monitoring their alcohol as well.
And there's some pretty good strategies to help parents with doing that, so we just need to get the information out to them. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome to come to ours tomorrow night. And
and impair districts and how we do.
No, thank you.
Just the health department.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we would next like to go to our PTA. Cynthia, if you would like to come and report, we understand you need to leave, so we will jump around today.
Thank you so much. Mondays are bad. My kids have ballet and ice, so I have to hurry. Just an update on the PTA. Our membership drive went really well. We've got a lot of members this year, which is really good. And then right now we're actually doing reflections, and most of the schools are participating, and they should be getting their reflections done within the next 2 weeks and turning them into the council. And the council PTA will be doing the judging sometime in January. So that's all I have right now. I don't know what you guys want. I've never done this before. So,
do you know when the reflections assembly is in January?
We do not know yet when the reflections assembly is. We're working on that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. You get that to Stacy, then we can get that out.
Yeah.
So we can.
Mm-hmm. As soon as we know, we'll let everybody else know, I promise.
Okay.
Perfect.
Anything else? Any questions for PTA?
Anything?
All right, and I'll get with these guys and try to get the word out to parents.
Great.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll now move to our action items. We need to take action on our school land trust reports. Is there any questions first on any of those before we do that?
Ken, this is just ensure that we have our assurances to the State Board of Education. This is one of the areas where they require that each individual local board approves the final as well as the budgets. We approved the budgets separately last time, so you would be able to see what they were. This time is the full package.
Okay, we need a recommendation to accept the 2010-2011 school land trust plans.
I would so move.
Okay, it's been moved by Ann Geary. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Been seconded by Christy Cooley. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We'll now go to our second action item. This is on our enhancement for at-risk students plan. Marshall, if you'd like.
This year, they have consolidated some of our individual below-the-line funding sources into one for at-risk students. In doing so, we also lost funding. That was one where the state totally, in the state, we lost over $8 million. Our district's share of that was approximately $40,000 to $50,000. But they do require a plan for the new enhancement for at-risk students. As you can see in the recommendation, I put down what are the three areas that we will be spending our funding on, but understanding that that's only a quarter of what we totally spend on our at-risk population, or even from our regular general monies. the emphasis on this, that the state does not provide enough in financial support for all of the at-risk requirements that we have from both the state and the federal government. You can see that we are looking at the homeless and disadvantaged students, which is underneath there. So within this big pot, this new big pot, we do have three small pots. One is going to homeless of $26,000, one going to the English Language Center, which we've made a commitment of $15,000 on, and then almost $188,000 to go for payment of some of our ESL teachers in our schools. We have 9.5 teachers that are specifically focusing in on our level one and two students. This pays for approximately 2.5 of those positions. And then I have given you on the second page some of the other funding sources through title that we do, as well as some other federal and state funding. And excuse me, not state funding, but local funding. But this is something that we do need to have an approval on by the Board of Education.
Any questions?
Does our legislature understand that they're underfunding this?
No.
I think it would be well to send an explanation of this and share it with them. I would guess other districts are doing have a similar impact, but I think we need to let them know how they're not dealing with this issue.
We've talked about it, but it's never, the light bulbs haven't gone.
But this one really shows, and I like the way you put it down.
We can do that.
Could we?
Yes.
It might be something we bring up at the next meeting with them.
Thanks, Sam, for bringing that up. Okay, would anyone like to make a motion that we recommend that we approve the enhancement for at-risk students plan for...
Can we add to fund the underfunded at-risk program?
Enhancement sounds like they've given us more, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I'll move.
Okay. It's been moved to by...
Jim Blair.
Jim Blair. To approve the enhancement for at-risk students plan for school year 12. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Fred Dersch. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, our next one is action on the Utah Consolidated Application. Marshall?
We gave you a few pages to review.
Yeah.
That's only about a fourth.
For not 400 pages.
This is a very comprehensive and very challenging process. The district has to put together between the federal funding sources as well as state funding sources. Because of all of the assurances, and you notice that I circled each of those assurances weren't quite the same, but we still have consistency. The assurances themselves are over 30 pages long. That are all codified somewhere, either in the federal government or in our state legislature and state board rules. Districts our size having to do exactly what a district of Granite size or Alpine size that have tremendously larger staffs to do this in. My thanks, very, very good thanks to Robin Williams for her part. Majority of the state and federal educational portion went with her. Also Marcy Belknap for the IDEA, which was a headache, and for Zane being patient with all of us as we were trying to do all the budget processing. With your approval today, we will send this in and find out what we've missed, and we will hopefully have it all wrapped up before Christmas time. Last year took us another 4 weeks after because of the dotting of the I's, which we thought we had done, was not complete. So they've changed the rules tremendously again this year. There were some expectations of us that we didn't know up front. So we didn't know we were supposed to collect some certain data, and going back after a year and trying to find that data has been a challenge. We have asked the state office this year to give us a preview of what's going to happen next year as much as they can, so that we can start anticipating what data sets we need to make it a little bit easier as we go into the 2013 plan, which will be due a year from now.
Okay, do I have a motion to accept the Utah Consolidated Application?
So moved.
It's been moved by Christy Cooley.
Seconded.
Seconded by Ann Geary. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
Can you imagine how boring that job would be to see if the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed?
You'd probably love it.
Bad enough. No, even I wouldn't like that.
Not my idea of a good time.
I'd just let Ann go through it next time. She loves to do that kind of thing. Okay, the next is action on the ratification of the administrator's negotiation agreement.
We have, this is our last association group, and they appreciate the fact for the opportunity of just spending time. Our administrators have been hard at work in their schools and to try to find time to sit down and meet and discuss what their options are. They've taken a little bit different tactic than the other two associations. Again, we had given each one-time funding to look at and to utilize as an association. The other two associations chose to break it into multiple years, and as the administrators looked at their portion, which is less than 5% of the overall amount that was available on a one-time basis, they've chosen to take theirs as a one-time process with a stipend for all administrators, and then an additional stipend for those that would be equivalent to steps for those that were available. Only 5 out of the 16 actually are in a situation where they would be potentially getting a step. So there's not a step, it's a one-time only amount that they will be getting. They're doing the medical, obviously, that we're with the health benefits. And there's one additional that was put in there in terms of they are also working with me on their reduction in force language, and you saw that the date of that, the goal is to finish it by February 1st, 2012. There was no other language changes.
Any questions?
I'll move we accept that and ratify it as written and presented.
Okay. It's been moved by Fred Dersch that we accept and ratify the administrator negotiated agreement.
No, yes. Second.
And seconded by Jim Blair. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay,
we'll now go into discussion items. It's a report on Mount Logan Middle School Literacy Academy presentation from Schools to Watch. And
turn over to Mike.
I guess, Mike, if you would like to come forward. And
you know, I'll give a little preface here to this and then turn it over to the experts. In every bit of our lesson planning, what we try to have teachers do is say, what am I teaching, how am I going to teach it, and what do I do if the kids don't get it? And it's one of those interesting things. I know you've had a lot of discussions on that topic of what do you do when kids don't get it, and we've, you know, for every 1,000 ways that kids either learn or don't learn something, there's probably 1,000 reasons for every individual that just doesn't get it, and yet some do, and so that's the real fun part of education, is trying to figure out how do you help kids. I know you've had the discussions on South Campus and alternative programs and how to meet the needs of some of those kids that are in that tier two or just need that additional support and help. And we have kids that come from all types of situations, whether it's developmental or whether it's experiences that they have outside of the classroom, even that are causing some of the things that we see. And so, as we've looked at it with both the Discovery Program and then with our Literacy Academy as intervention programs to try to help get some of those students back on track. I mean, we take this pretty seriously because we really look at if we don't catch kids by that eighth grade and we get them over to Logan High and they get a car and they're off and gone and we lose them. And so we really need to keep these interventions alive. And so this year, in spite of some of the budget cuts, we lost Christy Leishman's position as our literacy coach. We decided to bring her back on a half-time basis because of the success that we've really had in this program and trying to just see if we can't keep things alive and just not fail the kids and let them, you know, I want them to have the same great experiences that they've always had in the past. And so that's been really important to us. So Today, we'll do a little presentation of what we had the opportunity to present to the schools to watch in Washington, D.C., give you some background. It's not only benefiting our school, but we've had numerous inquiries about what's going on and a number of visitors, including two schools that came up last week on different days to try to pick the brains of everything that's going on. So today we have Christy Leishman, who has really been the developer of the program. She's serving part-time as our literacy coach and kind of reading advisor. She is really the brains behind this, and Carol Tonias and Tracy James. Tracy is not here with us today, but they're our AmeriCorps volunteers that are really implementing it, and they're in the classroom with the kids and helping them. And then we're fortunate enough to have a couple of our students here today, too, and so I wanted to give them an opportunity to just express a little bit of their thoughts and then also give you an opportunity to ask any questions that you'd like to. So I'm going to turn the time over to Christy to do this presentation.
Christy, an apology here. I'm having trouble with my mic to go up and come up and present our view. They can still see the slides. Should we just run up and present our
view
up there?
In fact, that's kind of funny. My presenter broke. This is my second one today. So, you know, we're just going to go with the flow here. We're going to make it all work. And so thank you, Clark, for helping with that. I appreciate it.
Apologize.
No worries. Thank you for your help, though. I just wanted to quickly introduce myself. My name is Christy Schreck-Lishman. I am the literacy coach and reading specialist at Mount Logan Middle School. And part of that means that I oversee Literacy Academy and what's going on out there. I used to teach English as a second language up at the university to international students and transferred down when Mike transferred over to the middle school. And I inherited a program that was sort of like a homework room. And so I did a lot of observations, did a lot of research, and put some stuff together that I found to be very effective. And as Mike described, is being recognized not only in our state by at least 4 or 5 different districts that are coming up, but nationwide. I'm now consulting with people from California and New Jersey because of the success of the program. And so we just wanted to share how neat it was. And I just wanted to extend a thanks to our students that are here to support us today. This is really awesome. I'm glad you guys can hear from them, too. So with that in mind, hopefully this PowerPoint turner will work. Let's see. But with that, our objectives today, as I just wanted to show you what the research demonstrates is effective in assisting adolescent at-risk readers and developing literacy programs focusing on our adolescent readers. Again, I apologize for the small print, but I'm just grateful it's up there on the screen. Secondly, we want to model some of those components for the Literacy Academy program and give you a chance to ask some questions or any concerns you might have regarding the components of this program. So with that in mind, I wanted you just to kind of think about a couple questions in your mind as we go through these slides and introduce the information. How do you know when a student is struggling to read? And how do you know when these reading deficits make the learning process problematic for teachers and students? And here's one way we know when those reading deficits make a problem for our students, because it's smaller. I'm going to read it for you. It says, it's called reading. It's how people install new software into their brains. Believe it or not, it's a little bit similar to sometimes the things that we do see when the students come to Mount Logan Middle School. I think there's the basic assumption that just because they come to our school, they turn 11, or they move into sixth grade, that all of a sudden they know how to read. That's not what's going on. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the research that comes up. Okay? But why literacy matters? Well, Dr. Strumquist, who is located at the University of Maryland, she works with the International Education Program. She says that in our modern societies, literacy skills are fundamental for making decisions, for being empowered, and for participating in community. And Dr. Darling Hammond, who's associated with Stanford's educational program, talks about how the success of nations and people is tied to learning and how reading is a direct correlation with that learning process. When we look at the new Common Core that Utah has adopted, on the left-hand side in the red, you will see the Common Core as what it looks like in previous years, and on the right, you'll see in the blue the Common Core that we've adopted. You'll notice that the blue is a lot more elevated. It makes the connections for our students to be able to be either career ready or college ready.
And the point is, it makes it that much more difficult for the students that come into the middle school. If you look at the fifth and sixth grades on the red, it moves up and it bumps up to the point where in eighth grade, we're looking at maybe a whole grade level higher that they have to be reading at. That's something we have to consider. When we look at the students that are going to be looking at college, and this is a graph that quickly goes through and shows you high school literature, college literature, all the way up to textbooks, whether they enter the military or go into occupations for their first time, what is it going to be looking at? And what we need to recognize is that does steadily increase. Our students' lexiles or reading abilities increases as the demands there. And at the end of high school, we need to make sure that they are at reading at a 1200, at least a 1200. Okay? But if you look for our students that are going to go into careers, some research out there is now telling us that over the last 15 years, lexiles have increased significantly for things that we never thought about. Look at constructions and craftsmen, for example. And in fact, I believe it was Robin who shared the example of when you go to a mechanic now, you go in and you used to think that it was just a toolbox they had. Not anymore. They have to be able to read. They have to be able to look at the diagnostics on the computer, go over to a big file, look it up, understand it, and then they can pull out the tools. So things that traditionally did not require a lot of reading now are. So where are we now? Steve Graham at a conference that I attended last year told us, well, there's some good news. We are definitely making progress. Okay? But the bad news is that it's not enough. It's very limited, and it's not meeting the grade level demands of what we need to be looking at. And with regards to those grade level demands, here's the RTI model that we're so familiar with. It talks about the first tier. The students have that direct instruction in the general education. The second tier are at-risk students, 15 to 20%, depending on what you look at as far as the graph. And the top tier are ELLs or our special ed students is 1 to 5%. But here's what's interesting. According to NAEP, the most recent one, 2009, it tells us that 67% of our fourth grade students are at a basic or below, 33% or below, much higher than what that RTI tells us. And if you look at our eighth graders, 68% are at basic with 20. Thank you so much.
That was a
child. Okay. So coming back to the bottom one, our eighth grade students, 25% are below reading grade level, much higher than that RTI level. So when we inherit these students from the elementary school, and please remember that our school is unique. We have a third of our population, our elementary students, our sixth graders. Okay? But our entire school, 25% are at risk for reading. It's a pretty high number when you think about it. Okay? Something we need to consider when we talk about the middle school. Here's what's interesting. The research out there, I put it into this graph so you wouldn't have to read all of the lots and lots of things that I did. But in summary, what happens if our students cannot read? It affects their school success. But the research also tells us that it affects their health factors, being preventative and receiving those health cares because they can't read. They don't know about those preventative measures. Their economic success is affected. Their well-being, but also how they participate within the society as well. So, with that being said, because of these studies, there's been a really big concerted effort to be looking at the effective practices for teaching literacy, specifically adolescent literacy. There's a big new trend right now looking at it. And here are some examples. The National Reading Panel, the Reading Next, the Writing Next, and A Time to Act. The bottom three are all from the Carnegie Reports, focusing specifically on adolescent literacy. With that in mind, I wanted to quickly just tell you literacy has changed with all the new globalization and technology. It's now including numeracy and technology encompassing with the reading and writing and speaking and listening. It's going to become a bigger thing that we need to be aware of. I'm not going to go through the five stages with you except to say most people assume that when we inherit our students from the elementary schools, they are at level five, assuming that they are fluent readers and writers. But again, Nate tells us this is not the case. So we need to be aware that that's what's going on. And based on the research, adolescent striving readers struggle with six things, one or more of these things typically, whether it's phonemic awareness, decoding, fluency, vocabulary, background knowledge, comprehension, and the new one for adolescent readers,
that you don't see in elementary is motivation. They're like an onion. They've built up layer after layer after layer because they don't want anyone to know that they can't read. It's embarrassing sometimes. And so what we have to do within our programs is pull down those layers with the program I'll talk about later on. But motivation is a key factor with our adolescent readers. Now, because of these things, these reading deficits, there is an achievement gap that we can see. But research tells us that we can bridge that gap when we use research-based programs like Literacy Academy. I love this cartoon. It makes me laugh. All right, we do want our students to be reading more, even if it is just to be able to see what's in the TV guide. But that's our whole focus in Literacy Academy, okay? And I'm going to quickly just summarize the research that's out there. The findings tell us that these are some of the focuses that we need to be looking at, okay? Extra support for our students, early intervention programs, and that is what they're extending now to be into the middle school ages. That early support is going to be needed there. Also, Presley talks a lot about this, the quality and explicit instruction by reading teachers, multiple opportunities to engage in reading and writing for multiple purposes. That's also a key component with this. Again, this is the research in a nutshell. Based on the Carnegie reports, as well as the Center of Instruction, which is located in Florida, they look at the interventions for adolescent reading readers, struggling readers. They tell us that there are six components that we need to be focusing on, and these are what they are. We need to be looking at fluency of text reading, vocabulary, and word knowledge, so multisyllabic word study is very critical at this age. Active and flexible use of reading strategies to enhance comprehension, background knowledge relating to the content being read, higher level of reasoning and thinking skills. Again, that's so critical with the Common Core, so critical. And motivation and engagement for understanding. Additionally, the reading panel and Shanahan tell us the same things except the very last item they add is that writing component. Steve Graham talks about the correlation between if we read well, we write well, and the reverse is true as well. So making sure we have both of those components in there. Now, if you're like me, theory's great, but what's really going on in the classroom? Show me the data. So let me show you. We have a couple different ways of assessing our students. What you see right up here is fluency, and let me explain why we address fluency at this level. The brain research tells us that we can only hold 5 to 7 things in our brain at one time in our short-term memory. If we are focused on decoding, we can't focus on comprehending. So this is why it's so critical that we address this with our students. As you can see, during first try, we are looking at narrative text, and 91% of our students increase their scores. Pretty amazing. We transfer over during second and third tries to informational text because that is what it looks like in the other classrooms, the science, the history, and English classes, getting them to see that transference. The scores drop a little bit, and our students know, but they recognize it's harder text. So our scores of 77 and 78% are still significant gains for our students in fluency. With regards to comprehension, first try narrative, 91% increased. Second and third try, 67 and 68. This is the harder component. But again, if we can get that long-term memory to hold the fluency, short-term can be looking at comprehension, the bigger part of what we need them to be looking at. Additionally, we pull in the SRI, which gives us Lexiles, which is that reading number telling our students where they're able to read at. And typically they say that most students will gain 75 to 100 Lexiles per year. But keep in mind, those are our students that always read, that have a book in their hand, the average students, the green part from that RTI model, okay? When we're looking at reluctant readers who do not pick up books, their scores will drop. Okay, so keep that in mind as you look at this data. Our literacy findings are this. 72.5% of our students increased their Lexile points. And of that, 45% of our students increased by 75 points or higher. Okay, making a whole year's worth of gains within that school year. But of those 45% of students, 65% of them increased by 100 points on the high end, and 35 increased by 162. Doubling it, getting 2 years' worth of growth within a year. Additionally, our top three students made 199, 235, and 300 in Lexile points. 390 is the equivalent of 4 years' growth within 1 year of literacy.
pretty impressive. Is that because suddenly the child likes reading and does it more? Is that part of it?
I will address that question, but I'll come to it. I'm going to address it now, but I will come to it later. The first 6 to 8 weeks of Literacy Academy, based on research, tell us that we have to be building relationships of trust. It has to be based on motivation. It has to be based on things that really help those students develop. Again, the analogy of the onions. Those layers have to be coming off, okay, so that we can get to the foundation of it and be able to help them focus on what's really going to make a difference for the students. And so what we do, we pulled in the UBI program, Utah Behavior Initiative. And I can show you a little bit more about that. But by building those first few weeks of procedures and protocols, but really focusing on that UBI, these students all of a sudden go, hey, I'm getting positive praise instead of negative praise. And it's very rewarding. And from that point, they are able to go, I can take risks now. I feel comfortable in this classroom. And I think that is a very critical point. Mike, did you want to add
something? Just interject one thing, too. One of the research findings, too, is that the greatest determinant for success or non-success in school is routine. And students that generally have trouble in school often lack routines, and particularly morning routine. So a lot of those kids that have never had structure, sometimes I have breakfast, sometimes I don't, sometimes I brush my teeth, sometimes I don't, kind of things are also impactful. It's not always the case, but it is something that has to come into this as a routine study.
Does that answer your question?
Mm.
Okay. So transitioning into what Mike said about those routines is up here is our schedule of what we do based on what research tells us is working. Okay. And again, having that routine of a self-start every day, transitioning into a fluency program, and then breaking off into the different types of areas that really help our students. I'll go through that. But again, Mike mentioned that routine is really critical. The first part, whenever our students walk in, they know to get a self-start, and we will transition between the writing, the vocabulary, and comprehension. For example, sometimes we'll have them take a paragraph and shrink it down into 10 words. In fact, the other day, we had them doing it in 9 words. And it's powerful because what they're doing is actually summarizing. They don't know it yet, but they're learning how to summarize. You can do sentence expansion, and you can have multiple sentences and have them combine it into one stronger sentence and teaching them how to write. And again, that strengthens their writing, and it also strengthens their reading abilities. So that's some of the things that we focus on for our self-starts. The second items are the fluency, and again, we do that every day because we want them to be able to get the decoding transferred into long-term so we can focus on comprehension. A lot of these activities are done with pairs and groups. The research out there tells us that collaborative constructivist view really helps these students to help them understand what's going on. But we as educators also pull in the GRRM, the gradual release of responsibility mode, the I do, the we do, and the you do. And we do a lot of we so we can get them on the same page and get them really strong in what they need to be doing. The last ones are focusing on the Read for Real. This is a great program because it models textbooks in an engaging way, but the neat thing is it's tied to the Common Core, and it correlates to that. So these kids are getting some of that great instruction that they need. We're also looking at vocabulary and rewards through morphemes, which is that multisyllabic word study, prefixes, suffixes, those types of things. We introduced the teacher read because a lot of these students don't have that at home, where their parents are working full-time, or maybe they don't have the finances to be buying books. We find that a very strong component that we pull into Literacy Academy. The DOVE, or the Daily Oral Vocabulary Exercise, there's actually about 40 or 45% of the words in all textbooks are repetitive. And if we can teach them those academic words, and they can transfer it into the textbooks in science and history, they're going to understand what they're reading more. It's pretty powerful. And again, having them use the newspaper and the current events is another part. Just a quick overview of what we do in Literacy Academy. Okay, pulling in using proficient strategies that readers use. One thing I think is critical to point out is that our students are apprentice readers. We have to model it. We have to show them what's going on so they can think about their thinking and be able to be better readers. Here's that UBI thing I was telling you guys about. I love this triangle because it focuses not only on academics, but it parallels it with behavior and showing them how we can help them to become engaged in a positive behavior support system. And so in Literacy Academy, as within Mount Logan Middle School, as you see here, we have a UBI ticket that focuses on participation, collaboration, work ethic, and courtesy and respect. And again, this is a really powerful, positive way to bring our students where they need to be so we can focus on the reading component. Now, this is the library that we have in Literacy Academy. There's a drinking fountain in the back. Massages are in the back. Okay, that's my dream library. Here's our real one. But what's cool is we have some books for our students. A lot of them have been self-selected by our students. They've told us what they've wanted. They're Lexiled, so they're at their reading levels. In fact, we got another grant that we've been writing and getting some books, and the students have had an enjoyable time working with us, selecting the books that they want to read. In fact, last year, I think it was fourth hour, correct me if I'm wrong, Carol, there was one book that they selected, and it went through the entire class, where the entire class read that book. It was amazing, and discussions were amazing with us. So another thing we have at our school that Mike and I put together is our leveled library. These are books that are arranged based on grade, 6th, 7th, and 8th. And in that, they are arranged and sorted by content, history, English, so on. And they're Lexiled, so we can give the students they need the background information in these contents that they may not have. Great support. All of our at-risk readers use it, whether they're ELLs, Literacy Academy, as well as our special ed students use this quite a bit. One more fun thing we do in Literacy Academy is we have an advisory where our strong 8th grade students come in and mentor our striving 6th grade students. Okay? It's a powerful program that teaches them to be confident in working with it. And within our school, it builds a really good rapport. The neat thing is the 6th graders' scores increase with fluency, but our 8th grade students are able to earn the Presidential Service Award. So it's really powerful for both of our students. And we just wanted to point out that we have been recognized in several different ways. Utah Middle Level Association we presented at, and from there we're now working with Santa Quinn. We work with Ogden. Ogden came back up last week. We're working with Canyons, and Box Elder has now expressed interest that they might be interested in this program. When we went back and presented in Washington, D.C. at the Schools to Watch, there were a lot of schools that were interested, and again, we're consulting with schools, districts from California, and now with New Jersey, we're Skyping with them and consulting. So it's kind of a really cool program that so many people realize because there's such a need out there, and it's kind of fun. This is a news clip that we were recognized. Clark, do you mind helping me start that? I just want to quickly show you a less than 2-minute clip of what happened at Mount Logan Middle School just 2 weeks ago.
How many students are in the academy right now?
Great question. We have all
65 students,
not counting the mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
That's just that. And they right now are our 7th and 8th grade students. Thanks for the help. Don't
tell. The National Assessment of Education Progress shows just 34% of fourth graders read proficiently, and students made marginal growth since the last test in 2009. Also, the achievement gap between white and minority students persists. 20% of minority and low-income students scored proficiently. And that underscores the importance of efforts like our reader rewards. Today, Chopper 5 landed at Mount Logan Middle School, where the enthusiasm for reading, as you'll see by this video, was almost too enthusiastic. The welcome was warm and a swarm. Mount Logan has a literacy academy to help kids who slip through the cracks and aren't reading where they should be by sixth grade, by third grade.
Yeah, when they get to the sixth grade with us, we find that there's still a lot of them that are behind, whether it's developmental or environmental.
So their mentoring program helps students catch up. Today, read today, and Big O Tires rewarded them with $1,000 in books that were custom ordered with older students in mind.
The more that these kids can learn, the better they can read, it just helps our whole economy out in the future.
We also made a stop and delivered books to an elementary nearby at Heritage Elementary. Community tutors visit every morning and work one-on-one with struggling readers.
What was neat is Nadine Wimmer, who came and saw us, she said, "You are the first middle school that I've ever seen do anything like this." And she talked with Mike and I and said, "Please keep me posted. I want to know what's developing, what's going on." Because she too recognized, just because I turn 11, just because I move to the sixth grade, does not mean that I can read. And she recognizes the importance of helping those students.
She also said, "We've always stopped at elementary schools, and a lot of times we'll let the kids come up and touch the helicopter." I don't think we'll do that today. Too many of them.
It was a worm and a swarm and inviting atmosphere, that's for sure. All right, in closing from here, the takeaways from today. Just going to reiterate what research tells us. We need to implement research-based programs that focus on these components of fluency, vocabulary, word study, writing, vocabulary usage, comprehension, higher-level thinking skills, motivation. And we're doing that, okay? Next one, comprehension. Oh, I've got that one, excuse me. The second item that research tells us we need to do is engage students in many reading and writing activities. Reading and writing for many purposes, making connections with the real-world application. That's what we're doing, okay? The last thing they mentioned is to ensure high-quality and explicit instruction for all students. And this is where we need your help. We need to be able to expand it to be including 6th, 7th, and 8th grades, not just the 7th and 8th graders. Again, those 6th graders are those elementary students. We need that support for everyone. And the research also tells us that certified reading teachers are the best resource that we can give these students. And that's the point that we would really like to drive home, is that we have a great program that many schools throughout the nation are adopting, and this would definitely help us to be that much stronger where we need to be going. With that being said, we just wanted our students to come up and share real briefly what it is that they notice and like or don't like about the students. Avine, would you mind coming up, please?
Hi, my name is Ivini. I'm a student in Literacy Academy, and I think Literacy Academy really helps us a lot because the teachers really study on you. When you raise your hand, the teachers come and help you one-on-one, and the classes are like 8 through like small classes. And so when you raise your hand, the teachers would come up and they would really help you on the worksheet that you'd be doing that day. And they would, if you don't get it, then they would help you understand more about it and how to do it. And if you have like a pencil problem, they'll help you with that. Like, they help you with everything. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you. So we don't pull into it anymore.
My name is Tanya Ordonez, and I go to Literacy Academy. Literacy Academy has helped me a lot since last year. Last year, my Lexile score was 500, and I increased like about 200 more. And it really helped me, and all the words that I didn't know from last year, now I know them. And I get to participate in all the activities with all my friends. And I really want to read more books about, like, the circuit, about a kid across the border and, like, how his family and all. And I really like those kind of books.
Wow.
And, like, for all my friends, even they don't care if my Lexile score is low, but they still help me. Even my family does sometimes. And that's all.
Yes. Thanks, guys. You guys are very brave to come up here in front of all these adults.
I'm impressed.
Excuse me. I feel really fortunate to have this opportunity to come before you and share this information and how it makes a difference for these kids. But before I close, I wanted to also share how fortunate we are, thanks to Robin and Mike, because we now have a $10,000 grant coming to Mount Logan Middle School to help us buy culturally relevant books that the students have self-selected. And what a powerful tool it is, because then the students are taking them off the shelves, just like we described for the fourth hour last year. And we really appreciate that support. Thank you. So any questions, any concerns, any ideas? Yes.
Two comments. One is, I noticed that you did this entire presentation the way we know that master teachers teach. You know, you stated your objectives, and I could tell we have a master teacher in the program, and I appreciate your modeling that master teacher. Do you have students? It sounds like they monitor their own Lexile scores. So is that correct? So they know where they are and what they're working toward?
Excellent question. Thank you for the compliment, by the way. Coming back to your second question, the different components that we work on, for example, we will use the SRI, the Scholastic Reading Inventory, that we brought to the middle school, and we'll be able to have the Lexiles of our students. And we also will pull in the AIMS, which is the fluency component, and have that correlation say, yes, this is the Lexile, the reading level that you should be reading at. At that point, we put them into paired groups. And we have them color coordinated, and on the wall we'll have their correct words, goals that they're shooting for, and then they'll have their passages. It's a whole process. We'd invite you to come out and see it. It's kind of an amazing process. But what I'm trying to describe is they will work in pairs, and we will do a running record every day. So every day they will read twice. For example, if you and I were working together, I would read to you and you would listen to me, mark my errors, notice if I had expression, and then on my sheet I would have a tally. So Monday I may start here, and here's Tuesday, and Wednesday the graph goes up and down, which is normal depending on if it's a cold read or, you know, if it's the end of the week. And then I would do the same for you. I would listen to you, mark it on there. So we will have 3 weeks of information put onto a sheet that they have a running record of, and they can see their progress being made. And oftentimes our students will see that their goals need to be changed, and so we'll look collectively and try to come up with a number that's on the wall to help them keep moving and moving up. Monthly, we will progress monitor them to see if they do need to move up to different levels and benchmark 3 times a year so we can see that they are definitely making improvements. Did that answer your question? Okay.
It's actually a nice pickup on your part, too, because what we want for all of our classrooms is really to express what the objective is to the students, because we feel like rather than trying to hide them and make them guess, we want them to know what it is that we want them to learn and to know. And so that sharing of information is really critical, I think, for the kids.
Very true. Any other questions?
Do you feel like there could be more students involved in the program, or are you taking the most critical?
Right now we are taking the most critical, but there are so many more that we could definitely pull in. And that's what we'd like to be able to reach, is all of them. You know, I think our society is only as strong as the weakest link, and we have to make that chain really strong by supporting everybody's needs, which at this point are the reading skills that need to be transferred so that they can accomplish the goals, whether it's career or college readiness. They are able to succeed and to feel comfortable about the success that they have.
Well, your passion is contagious. I think we've heard a lot of neat reports, but I think I can speak for the board that this has really been one that's really been touching. And to have these two students come and share is even adds to it, because you see the individuals that it's really helping. It's just not a program. It's helping young men and young women. And thank you. It was tremendous.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll just mention, too, I think the dilemma we're all in, too, because to run, you know, as mentioned, we have smaller classes and fewer students. And so you're looking at all of that because you want, you know, we have teachers with 180 to 200 students in their classes. And so to run a program that's smaller, different, but the benefits are tremendous.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Very good.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You. Thank you.
Okay, our next discussion item is with Mount Logan Middle School and the high school on their fee schedules and new course offerings and lunch prices. So,
but Mike, you thank you again for coming and all the support from the parents as well and those that have been assisting.
And Tracy James came in at the end there.
You've made a few changes on your fee schedule. Do you want to just address those in terms of an increase in specifically your art area?
Actually, those were, well, I don't think we didn't have any course offering changes in our fee schedule. Actually, it was submitted last year, and I believe approved by the board last year.
Yeah. Well, you've actually increased it from $15 to $18 for this year.
That was actually the one that we had submitted a year ago.
Because this had said for 12-13 has changed. That's why what we received.
So it's not.
I don't know. We emailed back and forth, and she had an older copy than what we had been using. But this is the one that.
So actually, this is not a change from this year. From 2011-2012.
Not that I know of. So.
Okay, and there's no other changes? Mm-hmm.
No, and the rationale behind the change in the art fee was just the supply
costs
had gone up. And okay. So, but unless I'm mistaken, we probably need to go back and review records, but I think it's one that you approved last year about this time. So.
Okay.
Okay. No, thanks. Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
So, Danny, you want to come up and talk about the new class that you're looking at, as well as the fee that's
according to next year?
Yes.
Yeah. It's the digital business applications class through CTE. Do you have that there in front of you, the description there?
98.
Page 97 and 98.
And there will be a fee added next year to our fee list. I believe that got sent over to Stacy.
Yes, $10.
$10,
yeah. Do you want to explain a little bit about transition in terms of some of the class discussion about this semester?
Oh, yeah. I know that we talked about geography all summer. We have not had a whole lot of dialogue yet with our social studies department at this point, but we're also looking at the possibility of changing our schedule to a trimester flex program. We've been doing a lot of study. Doug is going to come over tomorrow and visit a little bit with you. We just look at some of the needs that we're not meeting at this time that this schedule could really help, that every single day we could visit with the students either enrichment or remediation within the schedule. And we're working feverishly because we know that the time is short, but we to make sure that we're covering all the electives as well as all the classes that are expected through the state and then the additional ones that we have here in our district to make sure that we're not shortchanging anything. It's been a fast kind of process, but a process that I think has been healthy. I think part of it has been guided through us going through our accreditation. Right now is that some questions came up in some of the focus group meetings that we've had that's kind of sent us in this direction a little bit.
Bottom line on this is that if there are changes in that direction, which have not been finalized nor recommendations made, it may impact some additional changes to the course offerings, but this is what they know of right now.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing this right now, so that we have the foundation. It won't be a change in the name of the class, but it possibly could change the length of the class.
Right. Okay. Any questions or anything I can help with?
Will we have a discussion? I know we had information.
This is just we're at the beginning stage.
We're just barely starting with all this.
A comment from a parent to me who actually was at the presentation, her big thing was, that she feels like for upper-end students, they're losing opportunities by going to the trimester. So I hope as you look at it, are we limiting opportunities for those upper-end kids by going back to a trimester?
And I don't see that, but I think that's why we want to discuss it and why we're trying to turn every rock over to make sure if we make a change, it's going to be for the best for everybody. And that's what we want to do.
And I, too, would like it as a discussion.
This is only at the beginning, but it did impact the potential. I wanted him to bring that up because of the fact that right now we know what courses is being offered as a new one, but there may be some changes in existing courses that will also be discussed if that actually does occur.
Okay.
Now, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
In addition to the high school and middle school in terms of fees, we are also required to set fees for our school lunch program. School lunch program has not had an increase in seven or eight years. However, there are some federal mandates that are now requiring us to make some changes. So I'm going to turn some time over to Paul Guymon to share with you kind of what the requirements are and what the recommendations will be. Again, we're not voting on this tonight. It will be in December. We wanted to let you know about them so that if there's any questions between now and our December meeting, we would be able to answer those for you.
As Marshall mentioned, we have the federal government as part of passing the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, which passed last December. Part of that act is that school meal prices increase nationally. The reason behind that, from what I gather from in reading their Federal Register, is that free and reduced prices don't subsidize paid prices. In other words, the meal price that a paid kid is paying would be equivalent to what we were receiving from federal and state dollars for free and reduced students. There's an Excel spreadsheet. Clark's getting that up for us. The federal government gave us this Excel spreadsheet that we work off to see of how much we have to raise our meal prices. Presently, which this changes each year as they give us a different inflation rate every year, meal prices must equal at least $1.99 on average. That's between all grade levels. It's based on how many students were eligible, how many students were in the district in the month of October. By raising meal prices, we were required to raise meal prices a nickel for this school year, starting this past August. However, the state gave us some variances because of their untimeliness factor, as school had already started, actually. This Excel spreadsheet, it's not totally visible there. It's from the USDA, and they make it really big. What this is showing up here, on the left-hand side, you will see a monthly total of paid lunches. The paid price, which presently is $1.45, $1.80, and $1.85, that's elementary, middle school, and high school, and then the revenue. And on the right-hand side, you'll see the same numbers with the proposed rates that I'm proposing of 10 cents. That 10 cents comes from, we are required, the most the USDA can require us to raise lunch prices is 10 cents. And I figured we would go off the most as the new inflation rate has not been given out and probably won't be until summer. So if we were to approve meal prices, it would be likely we'd have to reapprove them again before school started again. So that 5 cent gap. As you'll see in the middle there, it says new average is $1.72. We can round down to a nickel, which would make $1.70. As you'll notice on the left side, it says current weighted average is $1.67. So our average there is 3 cents off, even after rounding down to their average. So on the other side, it says $1.77, which does meet the $1.70 requirement. At the bare minimum, we would have to raise lunch prices at least 5 cents. However, in doing 5 cents, I think we would probably be doing this again before school started. Anyway, that's kind of what I've gathered from what other districts are doing as well. This is nothing that our school district, including myself, wants to do. This is something that we're told we have to do. It's part of the federal act of being on the school lunch program. And as far as our knowledge goes, this does not affect the breakfast program. This presently only affects the lunch program. And so I wouldn't propose to raise breakfast prices at all.
Can I get this straight? That we're doing okay now, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
But the government says that the average price should be so much, and we have to raise them just to be raising them.
That's correct.
To get the money.
That's a wonderful deal, isn't it?
And if we don't, then it jeopardizes our subsidy back from the federal.
Yes.
So do we change the menus in any way to offset that? I mean, that's what I'm just asking.
Menus will be changing as we will be getting new regulations as far as same part of this act is changing meal offerings. That is supposed to hit us sometime in January for the following school year. If what's proposed there, meal offerings as far as whole grains, fresh fruits, vegetables, other costly items will be increased. Will it absorb the total 10 cents? No, I think there'll still be an addition there. But like I said, I think we have to raise lunch prices. That's not a...
But our costs will be going up because of the new guidelines. Because
yes.
They will,
do I think they'll be going up?
We will not be able to use all the commodities that they require us to use because they're not on their list of things to be able to use. Hmm.
I hope they don't tell me I have to raise all my bacon prices.
That's a very fair statement. It's been a discussion point between Zane and Marshall. We do purchase equipment out of the school lunch funds. The last 2 years, we've purchased quite a bit of new equipment, trying to get some well-outdated equipment out of the kitchens of more energy efficient, more time efficient, and less maintenance on them from district maintenance as well, which is cost of maintenance is hopefully will go down over the next few years. So that's one thing that will be purchased with that as well. We can have excess of 3 months worth of total revenue in our carryover account, which is where we're about at now.
So really this is going to affect those parents who pay for school lunch.
That's correct.
It's not going to affect those that can't pay for school lunch. So
no. Nope. Free and reduced are not touched. I would presume we'll have more apply for free and reduced as meal prices do increase. I would just presume that more would. They change the income guidelines typically every year on the federal level. That's who qualifies for free and reduced. And that typically, I think this year the average went up by, it was like $104 a year. It doesn't go up by much.
$104, that's a lot of money.
But that's what I have there. Any
but
other questions?
This doesn't start until next school year.
That's next school year, yes, that is correct. And it will be mandatory next school year. There won't be another buffer year like we got this year.
But we're only required to raise it 5 cents.
We are at least required to raise a 5 cents to meet the minimum.
But because that should have happened this year for next year, the reality is that the level where we would have to be if we don't raise it 10 cents in your December meeting, we will not meet that second one. So if we only did 5 cents, we would be short, and we would have to come back to you prior to school starting and increase it an additional 5 cents.
And this will be the other thing.
No, the reality, they told us it will increase again the second year, but they did not get the materials out to us in time to do it this year. It should have been a 5 cent this year and a 5 cent next year.
That's correct. It's
but we won't have.
It's based on a 2% mandatory inflation, a 2% increase, and a 1.4 inflation rate. They will adjust that every year. So the $1.99 price is presently this year. Over time, granted 3% isn't much, but that will eventually go up. Utah is fortunate. We're one of the only two states, I'm trying to remember the other state, I think it's Hawaii actually, that we get liquor tax dollars to help subsidize school meals. Presently we get between 40 and 60 cents per meal that's paid, reduced free. That's why ours is less than that. So if you went to a neighboring state in Idaho, theirs would probably be $2.45 that they have to meet. As paid price. Now granted, like I said, the USDA can only require a 10 cent increase, and so this is an ongoing thing. Likely we'll be doing this again in a year or 2 years until we reach their rate.
So this isn't a one-time, thing written in the law. It's an ongoing thing.
And what happens if we don't do it?
The school lunch program. The first year we would probably be reprimanded. The second year we would probably have funds taken. It's not an option, is what the state office is. Because I've said the same thing.
How come this hasn't been in the past? Why the change?
New regulations.
The new law that passed.
It's kind of a new.
The idea is they don't want free and reduced kids making paid kids' prices less, which is presently, in all honesty, what we do. We receive $2.48 from a free and reduced reimbursement, and we received about $1.90 and change from paid. And so there's about a 40 cents gap there.
The federal government doesn't want to subsidize your lunch program.
That's correct. Any other questions, comments? Good questions. They're all ones that...
A lot of the questions, we don't understand why, but it's the federal government, so you can't answer it.
These are all questions and comments and stuff we've had amongst the state, amongst other food service directors and districts, with Marshall and Zane. These are all same. And like I said, if it was my pick, I'd say let's keep it low. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
That we sure feed a lot of kids.
Okay. We'll now go to our recognitions. We'd like to recognize Bridger Elementary Employees of the Year. So, Dave?
I thank everyone for being patient. This is how board meeting goes. So if you haven't been to board meeting before, this is what it's all about.
What does that mean?
This isn't a guided board meeting. Hello? What?
Are you suggesting
I'm
this
sorry,
is exciting?
I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to. It's so exciting that it takes a while to get on to the next thing.
I see.
They've been waiting about 40 minutes to come up.
Okay. I was trying to get a little clarification.
I hope that clarifies.
I'm amazed they wouldn't want to come for the whole meeting.
It was a great presentation before us. I took notes, and I think there's a reason that went like it did, and we need to do those things. But
okay, just a little clarification. Right. I didn't know exactly what you meant.
That's where I was going with it. All right, we have recognition here for Teacher of the Year, for our Classified Employee of the Year, and also for our Volunteer of the Year. And I was really pleased with all of these picks this year. It's really hard at Bridger Elementary School to decide who to give these awards to, because really we could give these to everybody on the staff with the kinds of things that they're doing. But this year, I think it's wonderful that Polly Chug is being recognized as our Teacher of the Year. Polly, if you'd come up here, I want to read a little bit of what they wrote about you. And we have some awards here that we're going to give out to you. So just stand right here for a minute. And I know it's just a little group out here, but we want to make sure that they all get to see you. It says here, Polly teaches third grade at Bridger. The first comment here was, Mrs. Chug puts forth a great deal of effort for her students and anyone helping in her class. While strict, she is constantly showering love on the kids. She is very creative. Her teaching has inspired me and teachers, not only the kids, but also the aides. She is a hard worker and deserves a bit of recognition, of extra recognition. Mrs. Chug is determined to help each child succeed, and she tries to maximize each minute in the day. To ensure this, she tries everything that is asked of her with a positive attitude and expects things from her students, and she gets results. Congratulations. So,
Polly, the Board of Education would like to honor you as Bridger Elementary Teacher of the Year and give this plaque to you. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the Board of Education, as well as the Logan Foundation, Logan Foundation would like to present you with a gift certificate to go out to dinner, as well as a check. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have any family here that you'd like to introduce to us?
My husband, Alan Chuck, and my mom, Kathy Law.
Congratulations. I'm glad you're strict.
Congratulations. Way to go.
I was in her classroom today, and it was such a treat. She does an awesome job with kids.
All right, next we'd like to recognize our Classified Employee of the Year, and I'm going to invite Glenn Godfrey to come on up here. Now, I have seen a lot of nominations come in over the years that I've been here. I have to tell you, this was a unanimous vote for Glenn this year. He had an overwhelming support from the staff, and they really wanted to recognize him as an Employee of the Year at Bridger this year. So just know that as I read through this. Glenn is always cleaning up messes even the best people won't touch. He helps fix toilets, cleans carpets, and a whole bunch of other tasks that a lot of people overlook and don't see. I think he's great. Glenn is an all-around good guy, kind to all the children and staff, always willing to look out for everyone in the school. Glenn keeps everything well kept. The kids love and respect him very much. Glenn has a great attitude, always gets the job done right away, goes the extra mile with a smile, and is a very hard worker. Glenn goes the extra mile for teachers, students, cooks, and staff. He interacts well with the students. He even came in after hours with the Halloween festival was held to help clean and lock up. Unfortunately, one of the doors wouldn't lock, and he spent the night at the school keeping watch. Glenn is the most wonderful custodian. The building always looks clean and orderly, and the grounds are well cared for and safe for the students. He is respectful of all and so helpful to teachers and lunch workers. The students love him and respect him. He is so kind and gentle with them. He expects them to follow the rules. I think Glenn needs to be recognized for his effort. We think he's the best. Congratulations.
Thank you. Glenn, the board would like to recognize you as Bridger Classified Employee of the Year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, on behalf of the board, as well as the foundation, a check, as well as a gift certificate to go out to dinner.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Do you have any family?
I have my wife, Ann.
Great.
So he has this in writing when we're done as well, Ann. So,
congratulations. I don't know if I'm as good as the other ones, but that's not.
You have them fooled, right?
And next, we'd like to recognize our Volunteer of the Year this year, Sandra Westwood. If Sandra would come up here. Now, Sandra, there wasn't a whole lot written, but I want to add some comments to this as we go through this. And the nomination for you read that Sandra is always willing to lend a hand. The school carnival was a huge success, and there was so much work that went into the planning. We appreciate all that Sandra does. So everyone knows here, Sandra is our PTA president this year. This is her first year as PTA president, and she took it in hand to revive a school carnival as a fundraiser for the school this year, and put this together with a great staff. She's been able to really organize and draw out volunteers from our community. A lot of people are around her and supporting her, but of course she's putting in the hours that make that happen. So I'm very appreciative as a principal. We had about 3,000 people come the night of the Halloween carnival at Bridger, or the school carnival at Bridger Elementary. There was standing room only everywhere, and the kind of people that she recruited to this, one of the ladies stayed until 9 o'clock that night tying balloons because she wanted to make sure every child in line got a balloon that night that wanted a balloon. So those were the kinds of people that she's gathering around our school and from the community. And just great effort, and we really appreciate all that you do.
I would also like to recognize you as Bridger Elementary Volunteer of the Year. Thank you so much.
And again, on behalf of the board, as well as the foundation, thank you so much for all that you do. Do you have family with you?
I have my husband, Kevin.
Thank you.
Sandra Wingo. Appreciate it.
If I could just say a quick thing. Yes. Mrs. Chug is one of my favorite people ever. And she, I'm not going to cry, but as I think back about all the kids, teachers my kids have had, certainly Mrs. Chug has made one of the biggest difference on Bryce. And I think that she was the turning point on turning him from being in our earlier group where he needs reading help to being a great reader. So I appreciate you, Mrs. Chug, and I think you're well deserved of that accomplishment. And I am thankful.
Okay, well, the next item on our list is Cheryl Brown. I don't see Cheryl.
Did she? She asked to be excused.
Oh, pardon. Then our next one will be our LEA president, Mike Mudrow, if you'd like to come up.
I don't have a lot to report today. I apologize for not being here at the last meeting. We have one ongoing action item, and we have our first negotiations meeting tomorrow for fiscal year 13 with the district office team. I'll have more to report about that after that. And
that's on the reduction in force?
Yes, on the language items. Unfortunately, we've been spending most of our time in the last month dealing with issues coming from the Utah State Office of Education and from the Utah Legislature. And I'm very happy to report that we've been working in cooperation and not in cooperation with the district office on these items. And I wanted to extend a heartfelt thanks to everybody on that team who's been working tirelessly for the teachers in our district. That's about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I noticed Doug Beach was... Oh, all right. Dave, if you'd like to come up then and represent the Administrator Association.
Doug had to step out. He has scouts that he had an activity with, so that was a time issue for him. We are at the point we signed our agreement. I think that's what we did last week. We signed off on our agreement. We are also looking at a reduction in force policy for the administrative contract language. We were scheduled to work on that in December. I think we're a little bit behind as well on where we wanted to be, so that may take us a little bit longer to get through, but those are that's where we're at with things at the moment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I have reports from board members. Fred?
Well, I really don't have any significant reports. I want to confirm the TEC meeting. Is that this Thursday at 11, Marshall?
They canceled it?
TEC.
Should have gotten an email from Kirk today.
I didn't get it. Well, I haven't checked yet for today.
That's the meeting with the tax. Right, for the RDA. That's all. Fred is the representative of the board on that. Okay. And they have not set another date, have they? They're not having one this year? They did send out, and did you get the materials? They had sent out an email with materials as a review. Okay, I will get that to you.
All right, that was the question I had.
Okay.
I don't have
anything.
Ann? Several things. I went to the meeting with Marshall and Christy, the Senator Osmond meeting. The interesting group went down, and I guess the assumption was that we would have all read the entire bill and everything, the ideas, and it was somewhat refreshing that he actually wanted people's opinions. But it was kind of like, okay, I'm doing something new. Tell me your opinions of it. Normally you see some kind of, in fact, we stayed late to do the other session to see if he made more explanation? No. So basically, he just wanted people's input. I think he's learning a bit as he tries. He was the one that originally was going to do these independent schools, and I think he realized that that was a bad idea. And now it's that every 5 years that someone's contract would automatically
expire.
The thing I've thought about with that is, if every 5 years my husband didn't know if he would have a job or not, that inconsistency, and that just in every 5 years that you don't have to give a reason, you can just decide. And then he said, but of course, if we saw that you were letting go all of the older people who cost you more, or people that had white stripes instead of black stripes, then there would be an investigation. And Marshall brought up the good point of, currently there is case law in the state of Utah, and we all have the same orderly termination. If you allow all 41 school districts, we say we want local control, but that everybody does it totally different, they change all the rules, then what we do, we may go to court over, because there's no precedence anywhere. And I think it opens us up to a lot of litigation. It also, I care about our teachers. And I worry about, you know, once we get people over their provisional status, that first 3 years, you know, his big thing is, we got to get rid of bad teachers, and there aren't that many bad teachers, but we've got to do more. I believe in this district, we've worked, when we have someone we need to remediate, we remediate them. And so I'm really uncomfortable with this proposal from Senator Osmond that, you know, automatically all the contracts are gone every 5 years. So that was an interesting meeting. I went to the Hillcrest Veterans Day Assembly. And what was interesting, my son went because his wife was out of town, and he had his little one, and the little one was singing right along with the kids, and they sang God Bless the USA. I looked over at my son, and he had tears just streaming down his face like all the veterans did. And when I told the children, my grandchildren who sang, that I saw their daddy cry, they said, I've never seen daddy cry. And I think that's what children and music and veterans brings to you. It's, you know, it's that love of country and children and of music. It was just very well done, and I know it was well done at a lot of our schools, and I think it's great that we do that. There was one more thing, and I can't remember what it was. We have the Legislative Committee for USBA meets this Friday. We are trying to meet to deal with some of these interim things so that we are running the ground, you know, we're running as new things come out. Went to the football game last Thursday. It was very fun. It was great weather. And the InTech board, we meet. We went into a closed session when we shouldn't have in a few things, and I'm trying. I could have been chair of their board, but I told them that I didn't think it was appropriate for me to be a chair of their board. But some, you know, very different when you go to a different entity with different policies and rules, and you try not to be too vocal about some things. But it's an interesting experience serving on that board.
Okay, Jim.
There was a really great Halloween program in a fourth grade classroom in the Wilson School I attended. It was the annual Halloween program, and I did not have to do any videotaping, so that was good. Enjoy it. And I don't have anything else to report.
Good. Christy?
As Ann mentioned, I also went to the meeting with Osmond and Shumway, and it was very interesting to hear his perspective, and I really did appreciate, as Ann said, that he at least is asking rather than just ramming it down our throats. So I think it's good that he's got some dialogue, and I hopefully he'll be able to see how it will impact the districts, and he'll be able to at least get a better perspective before just saying this is what we're doing. So I was very grateful for that. I went to the helicopter coming at the middle school, which was also very fun. It was I thought it was entertaining how they thought they were going to keep all those kids back behind the caution tape, staked to the ground with a broom handle, but it didn't work, and they swarmed Nadine. It was actually kind of cute, but that was a fun, exciting time to be at. And then I just went to the football game as well last week, which was also great. And I think that's all I have.
Okay. I just have a couple of things. I just want to... wasn't it several months ago that we were approached about the possibility of funding from the specialty hospital for a trainer, an assistant trainer?
Yes.
Where are we at on that? Well, I've never heard.
It's on the list of being able to get. Part of it is determining whether it should be an employee of Cache Valley Specialty Hospital or not with us, and we have not had a second meeting to be able to finalize that.
And in some ways, I think they want the same thing, but you both think the other one wants the other one?
Well, we just don't know. We have to get back together, yeah. And I have not been able to
facilitate from what that. I've understood, you know, they want what we want, but we think the other one wants the other thing.
Yeah. So that is on the to-do list. We just have not gotten to it yet.
The other thing I wondered about was the reaction. I don't know if everybody's getting on the discipline and stuff. Is there any way we could go through the have a procedures thing, something through the athletics or something to even things out?
One of the things that in talking with Dan that he is going to institute, and I've got to work with him on a timeline for, there are procedures in very general terms within the L book, which is not hard copy anymore, but it is electronic. In the past, it has been still up to the individual advisor to make recommendations as to the consequences. With all of the activities and the challenges that we've seen over the last 6 weeks, that he has seen a need to be able to get together with his coaches and with his advisors and start looking at the L book process, which is high expectation, but the consequences are left to advisors in terms, and that has been ongoing. That has been something that has been there for a long time to determine whether or not there should be certain specific expectations that is tied into our safe schools plan that under certain conditions these consequences will be expected. So that should be coming. My goal on that would be as they work not only with our community, because I believe the parents need to be involved.
Yeah.
My encouragement that, and we've talked a little bit about a community council co-chair with him to be able to set up a committee of parents and of staff, as well as getting some input from our students. Because we've got not anybody who's covered by Utah High School Activities Association. And again, their rules will only go into play if there is a safe schools violation with a weapon or with the use of drugs. So there's a very wide gap of that we need to look at in terms of what the consistency could be or should be between all groups.
I think that would be good.
Marsha, where's that located on Logan High webpage? I didn't know the elbow was on.
I found it. I spent a couple of hours, and that's the problem. It's hard to find.
I have looked and looked and looked.
And there's, you know, the thing is, if you look under policies, it's not there.
It's not there.
And I can't even remember how I found it. I told you how I found it.
You did, and I have not had a chance to. I know it is there, but it is not where it should be as it was available in a book form.
Well, and it should be, you click on policies, and it's
and it
not
should
under
be
policies.
Or it should have its own thing that says L book.
Right, or it should say school policies or rules, mm-hmm. And under that it has the basically acceptable use, and then the attendance policy someplace else.
Right.
And anyway,
it is not, their website is one that needs to be worked
on. Well, and you should be able to click on policies or student behavior or something like that, and it's there, and it needs to say participating in these certain things is a privilege, not a right, and here's what you must do to be able to do it.
Well, I've looked through the website, and I still
I can find it and
it.
Quoted it to Marshall.
Yes.
I spent quite a bit of time finding it.
I have not found it yet.
And I have not found it yet either, because I've looked for it.
And what happened when,
Mike,
how it's supposed
Mike,
to happen?
Know.
I know the webmaster, so I'd be happy to talk to him and make sure we get those changes implemented.
Well, and yeah, if we're not giving an L book out anymore, we need to have that stuff accessible to parents, because it does say when it happens, the coach will do the personal thing, and then it goes to a committee. And some of these people who've been upset, I've been able to say, because I found it, you know, the coach has his own, any kind of coach, whether it's, you know, whatever, a different group, coach has for missing a day or whatever, and then the school has a committee that's supposed to be called, which was, and then they give out the school-wide discipline. And there, it does say that, and I have it somewhere in my stuff, and I'll send it to all of you.
All right, thanks. Okay, Zane, anything you have?
I've attached the financial report tonight. In addition to October, when I was doing October, I realized I made a mistake in the September report, so I put a corrected September one in here, as well as October. The mistake I made is on the M&L fund state sources, if you look at the one that was last month, it said 184,986 instead of 1,888,000. I've missed an 8 in there somewhere. So anyway, thought I'd correct that for you. And then the October report's in there as well. So I don't have anything particular to bring to your attention, except I think the auditor is planning on doing the report at our December meeting. So we'll arrange for an audit committee meeting as soon as they've got it finished, and then they'll plan to be that board meeting on the 13th and
all right.
Take official action on it then.
Okay. Thank you. Marshall?
As you know, we had a good game last Thursday in the semifinals, are now in the finals. There had been rumor that we were going to be changing some of the games for this coming Friday because we were scheduled again to be at 11 o'clock. That because of UHSAA's contract with KJAZ, they were not able to make those changes, and so we will still be playing at 11 o'clock at Rice-Eccles Stadium. We have made contact with their executive director and a concern about instructional time, and that we, by having a successful team, we are now being penalized 2 days of instructional time. And we are going on, on a minimum day schedule. There will be buses for students. We took down over, I believe, 12 buses last week, and we anticipate that that will actually be larger this week. We need the challenges is we need supervision down at the games, which a lot of our staff went down, but we also need supervision up here, and some of the staff that stayed here were able to handle those students that did stay. We did have a minimum day, and buses came at 12:10. We will have a consistent schedule on that again this Friday. I will be working with Dale Lamborn, who is the superintendent's representative, to the board of directors of the High School Activities Association, because I believe that they need to look at the protection of instructional time over that of television contracts.
Do we need to write an official letter with everybody's signature on it?
I will start with myself and ask Dale whether or not what will have the biggest impact to the board of directors, and if he feels that it would be through USBA or individual districts. We have been the most impacted because we've been the most successful going through. Others, they were still playing at 2:30, which means that most, you know, our games, the game that occurred right after ours on Thursday was also a 4A. So 4A really got caught, and I don't, you know, our games in the past have been the 5 o'clock or the 7 o'clock, or the 5 o'clock
one,
or the 8 o'clock.
One week in the morning and the next is the night.
So it's been a lot more flexible. But, again, my question is that if we're doing this way for instructional time, maybe we need to have multiple sites. If they can't put us all at Rice-Eccles for our semifinals and finals in an appropriate time frame, then we either need to look at a Saturday or we need to look at something that's afterwards so we can get the least amount of impact of our instructional time.
I think we ought to talk to our regional.
Oh, it was nice of
who is our, is he from?
He's from Box Elder.
Box Elder?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember his name?
I don't write off, but I'm sure Claire, one of them, okay, can tell you. I think it would be good to talk to him so you have the voice of two individuals,
okay,
to have.
But we will still continue, and I will let you know what.
Well,
I
heard that someone had mentioned to me that it alternates every year. So this year we had both early games. So next year we should have both afternoon games. Is that true?
I don't know. The reality is if you look, it was, if you look where we were seated, we were number one seed, and that the top went this way. The bottom actually did not. Their semifinals was at 2:30 and then 11. So we had, in all, 4A took most of the early times than any other level, and that's a concern. If they're going to do some balancing between the 5A, 4A, and 3A who will play there, there should be some sensitivity. But we took the brunt, and as a school and school district, we took the brunt of the whole thing by having a successful seeding as well as a successful tournament.
So the only way to meet the requirements is to have.
We either had to have, we would have had to cancel school, but I would have had to have found two other days during winter break or spring break to make up. By having minimum days, we're able to meet the 180-day requirement.
But the instructional time that's lost, I doubt there's much time to even get into anything, is there?
It is not as effective of instructional time as it would have been had we had later times.
But it does a lot for a school.
But when you look at the support from the community and our students, that's important. This is an important process for our children, for our students. And I know it's difficult for parents. I understand this is not what we wanted to be able to have for all of our kids. We want them in school. We want them to be able to have as uninterruptive of a schedule as possible. But this is a very important thing as well for our kids.
Well, and I think it's also important to realize that chances of them going to the game would be high anyway, even if we did a full day.
And this way, we have them on our buses, which are safer.
And they're not driving down in a car with four of their friends down there and taking 20,000 cars or whatever.
Correct.
And being kids.
20,000. Wow.
They could have.
That's right. As we walked along that bus line to see how many Cash Logan buses there were compared to. We did have more kids there than.
We did. And we had more community. It was neat to see community members supporting us.
How many people were there?
A reminder of a couple of things. Number one, on the 29th at 6 o'clock. We have our joint meeting with the city council. It will. Have we found that out yet exactly? Are we going to be in the council chambers?
It'll be in the conference room, City Hall.
Okay, conference room, City Hall, wherever that is.
6 o'clock.
Six o'clock.
Early voting the 29th.
And we will have from 3 to 6 that day is our master planning schedule. For those of you who've been involved in that, you should have already received one email reminding you of the date. We're still trying to find a place.
Okay, and is that going to interfere with, isn't that the same day we're doing Thinking Maps?
No, Thinking Maps is on the 30th.
Okay, so that's the next day.
The next day.
Okay, and then the city council is at?
6.
City council's at 6 in their conference room. The item that we're bringing up is the facilities assessment in terms of the rec center. I don't know what else is on the agenda from their side. We will have an update of what that. I'm hoping they've not gotten back to us on the cost of doing. We have a proposal on the crosswalks, but we do not have We also don't have back from risk management their review of the requirements that the city is putting on it in terms of liability. So that's an area that we still need to get back to, but we can have at least an update from them as to whether they have the costs and update the council as to the possible solution on that. Yes?
Well, I had a couple more things I wanted to mention.
Sorry, you missed
it. We're trying to have. So with that, I think, and Dan, Christmas, for our Christmas dinner, I believe we have that on after a certain event. It was the fourth. I believe we had said the 14th, Wednesday the 14th. It's on the Monday the 12th. Okay, Monday the 12th.
Where is this?
Copper Mill. And we're doing 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I'll get back with you on menu.
Thank you. You can celebrate for getting rid of your kid.
Or cry over my cheesecake.
Oh, yeah.
Can you stop it?
I've already told you they don't come back to you, so just ignore it. Just don't worry about it. Okay, Zane, you said you had a few.
Just wanted to let you know we have 2 new employees in the district office. We hired a lady named Mindy Kay to do our accounts payable, fill the accounts payable position that we had open, and Tammy Johnson, our payroll specialist.
Pending approval by the board, right?
Pending approval by the board, but they...
There you go.
They started this today, so I sure hope you do.
How can they start without us approving them?
They don't have the answer to that. I just thought that's... Did I not follow protocol?
So you know, Mindy is which?
Huh?
Mindy does...
Mindy K.
Is...
Accounts payable.
Is accounts payable. Where's
Randy?
Well, they both... Chris.
We could say no.
We replaced the one with 2 part-time positions.
And then Tammy works in...
And Tammy Johnson is payroll specialist, and we're going to make that part of the HR going forward.
I have a question on our approval of things like that. What would happen if we said no at this point?
Then if you said no on anybody, that they would be terminated.
Why do we even do it as a board if they're already hired?
Because it's required by law.
It's required by law that all employees have final approval by the Board of Education. That is,
should they be approved before they are actually? I'm just asking.
Fair question. I don't think what we're doing is unusual for practice.
No, I'm just saying.
The reality on that is we would have to change a whole paradigm process, because when a person gives a notice of leaving us, is now 30 days. We would, because of our board schedules and only having one board meeting a month at the end of the month, we would have to do a whole different process so that you would approve before they would start. And it would be it could be done, but it would make it a very, very difficult process for us to follow.
But it seems to me, in all actuality, if we are approving individuals to come to work for us, should not that be done before they are hired? That's all I'm saying.
Or at least or, to run past us.
Or someone. I mean, I'm just...
Okay.
I mean...
This is, as someone that
puts forward
the program, one of the things that most of the time, you know, and so I think where you would get into a place on the board that have oversight to say no way would be if you were going outside of the budget we already presented to you early in August. Does that make sense? So when we're replacing someone, that's the position we've agreed to at some point during the school year. versus if we were, if I were bringing a 40 position.
Yeah, but we approve individuals.
Yes, they do. We
approve individuals, so it just seems a little bit redundant to me that we even, maybe, I don't know, I just...
I agree.
I'm not saying...
I don't know what there's a solution. Yeah. We can ask other districts, but the practice that we do is consistent with the practice in every district and every state that I know of.
And that's the job is offered to the people before...
But it is in contingency with the board approval, so that if they do start it and you have said no, it will be pulled.
And we've had to do that a couple of times.
So you do have ultimate authority. We have responsibility. I have responsibility to ensure that there is that the positions are being filled and being done in a matter that is consistent with law. Then I bring that list to you for final approval because of the requirements in state law and state board rule that you are the ultimate person of hiring. So but it is an after-the-fact process. You are correct.
And one nice thing is that all of these people have to go through a background check now where... Yeah,
the levels of expectations prior to getting to you is much higher. But again, it still comes down to you being able to say thumbs up or thumbs down. And that part, it is after the fact. It is a chance that a person has been at least up to a month, potentially. It could happen that the day after that you have done the approval that they're hired, they would be on the next month's, but that would be literally up to a 30-day process. And in many cases, it would be very disruptive to programs if we had a 30-day interruption of not being able to have an employee there. For this case, we were given our notice in an appropriate manner. But the reality of vacation and sick leave or vacation time, the leave that she had available, she actually left in only 2 weeks. So we have had almost 3.5 weeks without anyone in that position, which has been has been challenging, but we've made payroll.
Well, as I look at this, there's probably no reason. I mean, we'd made up our mind on this last week.
So it could have been part of this.
In my mind, it could have been part of this classified personnel action sheet, and for whatever reason,
it was not finalized in time, though. It would already been. It was already to us. I mean, we have this by last Wednesday. So, and it was done.
Right, but there's no reason why we couldn't have updated that. I mean, yeah, it would have been a last-minute change. But
I'm not a big concern. No.
It does seem strange.
I just... anyway, meeting's adjourned.
There you go.
I wanted to mention one other thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll open the meeting.
I know two of you got copied on an email today that I got from a teacher, or that several people
on the time
from
clock.
On the time clock.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm bothered by that in a couple ways. A, I don't think it's appropriate that they're interviewing a principal in the district before they go to you guys. That bothers me. But those are issues that we're dealing with, and what I was going to do was, if you'd like, I could have Ted plan to come to our next board meeting and give you a firsthand update of where we are with that implementation process. Is that something you'd be interested in?
Well, it just sounded to me like they had tried several times and they were at their wits' end, so they were just sending out a blank.
The problem is they did not know that. Yeah, they did not follow the fact that there was never a work order put in.
Well, and I appreciated that Clark sent me the notice.
They also had not gone to their school site. It did not go through their principal, even as an emergency situation that still could have come through a work order and communication. They had had some fixes on it. They had thought that they were fixed, but the communication back was not there. And then, obviously, they're frustrated. There's some frustrations. Stacy is a non-person on the system. It will not take her thumbprint.
I think she's a former CIA agent. She's had her fingerprint.
We've done this 50-plus times.
Put him in acid.
So we do have some problems, and again, that's why we're doing a slow implementation. It's not is not as smooth as we had hoped. That one specific time clock had a problem early on. It purportedly had been fixed, but the communication back from them was not immediate either. They just went and were frustrated for another 2 to 3 weeks without anyone letting us know that it was not fixed.
Are you interested in a report from Ted, who I put in charge of that process, or
yes,
or not?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it would.
Well, and I even think possibly have him talk about the change in insurance and how, you know, and all those changes that they've had to do, and how is that working now? You know, the other email that we received that was an early reaction, but I think possibly both of those issues could be touched.
Okay, remind me of which one that was.
That was on when does money get put into those other accounts? And
I did, just
things.
Kind of an update would probably be good on both.
Change over in insurance and how that's impacted.
Okay.
Because I know he deals with all that.
Okay. Thank you.
Meeting is now adjourned. Run.
Notice is only 2 hours and 20 minutes.